tomorrow and tomorrow night. The forecast for East Central Illinois this afternoon, mostly sunny with a chance of showers and thunderstorms, the high 83. The wind out of the southeast at 5 to 10 miles per hour. Tonight, there's a chance of showers and thunderstorms this evening. Showers and thunderstorms are likely after midnight. The low overnight 62. The wind will be out of the southeast at 5 to 10 miles per hour. Tomorrow, showers and thunderstorms are likely. Look for a high of 82. The wind will be from the south at 15 to 20 miles per hour. Tomorrow night, more showers and thunderstorms, a low of 62. The wind from the southeast at 10 to 15 miles per hour. Thursday, showers and thunderstorms are likely. It will be cooler with a high in the low 70s. The wind will be out of the east at 10 to 15 miles per hour. And the outlook for Thursday night, cloudy and cool with a chance of showers and a low in the low 50s. At noon Central Time, most of Illinois and Indiana reporting sunshine. Temperatures ranged from the upper 50s to the low 80s. At Rockford, it was 66, 59 at O'Hare, 79 at Bloomington. In Mattoon and Carbondale, 77 degrees. The warm spot in Illinois, Macomb, 83 degrees. South Bend, 75. Lafayette, 80. Indianapolis reported 73 degrees. And at Terre Haute, it was 75. Willard Airport reported a partly sunny sky at the top of the hour, 80 degrees, the dew point 61, the relative humidity 52%, the wind out of the southeast at 12, the barometric pressure 29.83, and steady. And at 12:39, 80 degrees in Urbana. The Germans have a passion for automobiles. That passion is running up against European Union directives to reduce carbon dioxide emissions. So rather than ask German drivers to give up their highly tuned cars, the government is offering them E10, gasoline mixed with ethanol produced from corn and wheat. But there are a couple of problems. Environmentalists say it is no greener than regular gas, and German car lovers refuse to buy it. NPR's Eric Westervelt reports.
Franziska Mühle fills up her VW Polo on her way home from work. Its shiny waxed finish mirrors her immaculately put together business attire. Even though it's cheaper, the 32-year-old says there's no way she's going to risk putting the new 10% ethanol gas called E10 in her car.
You bet I'm worried about my car, most of all about the motor. Nobody can guarantee that it won't get damaged. Of course, it means I pay a bit more for gas, but for now, there's no way I'm touching the stuff.
Ms. Mühle is hardly alone. The German Automobile Association says that some 85% of Germans are refusing to buy the biofuel, despite the fact that it's about 8% cheaper by the gallon than ordinary super unleaded gasoline.
Anybody who wants to introduce a new fuel in Germany, we'll always have a problem because Germans are car crazy.
That's Frank Bruning with the German Biofuels Association. He insists the public's extreme lack of enthusiasm has mainly been a problem of marketing, that the biofuel is in fact compatible with finely tuned German engines.
There is no problem whatsoever with using E10 in your car, so there's no problem with that. It's safe to use biofuels. It's good for the environment because it reduces CO2 emissions. And it replaces fossil fuels, of which we have less and less in the world.
But German consumers are not convinced. They say there are no guarantees the gas won't harm engines. Germany's attempt to up the amount of ethanol in fuel from 5 to 10% has proven such a tremendous commercial flop that gas companies in Germany have already drastically reduced production and distribution of E10. The fuel was introduced as a measure to meet the European Union's energy directive, which stipulates that 10% of transport fuel should come from renewable sources by the year 2020 as part of a bid to reduce overall energy consumption and CO2 emissions. Meantime, environmental groups say ecological damage is another reason to steer clear of E10. They say the energy used to make and transport the fuel, as well as the pesticides and water used in the production of crops for ethanol, are just as damaging to the environment as filling up with regular. Vanna Ray with Friends of the Earth Germany charges that crop-derived fuels are also boosting global food prices.
Why should we invest in biomass to grow for the tank instead of the plate? People are hungry. We can't really afford, and we don't think it's ethical to do that.
But Germany still needs to find a way to meet the EU's clean energy directive. The German Green Party is calling for the wider introduction of wind farms and electric cars. But as the biofuel industry's Brüning points out, the alternatives are not yet available in sufficient numbers.
Right now, the only alternative that's existing is biofuels. And the German government's hopes that until 2020 we have 1 million electric cars. But in total, we have 50 million cars, so it's just 1/50. That's just not a figure.
In the wake of Japan's nuclear crisis, more and more Germans have joined the long active chorus here of citizens calling for the country to phase out its nuclear power plants by at least 2021. So with more Germans saying Nein danke to both nuclear power and biofuels, CO2 emissions are likely to increase in Europe's largest economy before they decrease. In fact, German companies are now building several new coal-fired power plants to help meet energy demand. Eric Westervelt, NPR News, Berlin.
In the springtime, beehives get crowded. They're full up with honey and baby bees. So it's time to hunt for new real estate. Some bees stay in the nest with a new queen, but a second group, led by the old queen, heads off to establish a new home. How do they choose that new home? Here's NPR's Robert Krulwich.
It starts with a hum. You might hear it in the woods, or maybe in your backyard. In springtime, says Cornell professor Tom Seeley, a beehive gets very crowded, so often a bunch of bees will split off, led by the queen, and the first thing they're going to need is a new home, so they've got to choose one. But how they choose, that's the big surprise. It turns out that bees vote, and Tom Seeley has figured out how they do it.
They fly out of the parental hive, and it's a mass exodus, and then they reassemble. Once they're outside, they assemble themselves into a beard-like cluster. It's about the size of a soccer ball.
A beard-like cluster? So it means that they look like a beard?
Yeah. If Santa Claus had a dark brown beard, that's what it would look like. It hangs from a tree branch, and it kind of sways around a little bit like a beard would blow around.
And when they're swarming, at this point, they're gentle, right? They don't sting you if you try to touch them?
Yes. You can go up to them. You can put your finger in the cluster and feel how warm it is inside. You do all sorts of stuff. Like, you can even do scientific investigations of them.
Okay, so let us ask, what are the bees now looking for? Well, Tom says they need a hole in a tree high off the ground, lots of space inside, narrow opening, facing in the right direction.
So they've got a real problem. Finding first-rate living quarters is not easy for honeybees.
And it turns out they don't have any, bee instinct that says, here's the place. The queen is not involved at all. Instead,
The bees that go looking, and we call these nest site scouts, they are among the oldest and probably the most experienced bees in the swarm.
And they're a small group, you say, about 5% of the hive. So how many bees is that? 5%?
So that would be about 300 to 500. Oh. So that's a sizable search committee.
Yes. So imagine you're a scout. You're all female. So off you go, wandering the forest. You pass an elm tree, then a beech tree, then an oak tree. Then on the oak tree, you see a nice-looking hole. So you enter, you look around. And then after your inspection?
What you will do at that point is you will come back to the swarm cluster, and there you will perform a waggle dance.
That's a classic dance in the style of a figure eight done by honeybees. And what the waggle dance says is, it's here, it's here, to find it you gotta go here. It's here, it's here, to find it you gotta go north by northwest, 120 degrees by the dandelions and the rhododendrons.
That's it, yep. Then she runs right around again, back to the starting point, and does another one over and over again. And she's indicating the direction and distance to the site that she discovered. I should mention, she spent about 30 minutes checking out that site. She's measured all the relevant properties of the site. It's as if she ranks it on a scale of 1 to 10, 10 being tops. When she gets back to the swarm, if it's a 10, she might do 300 of these dance circuits, which might take 10 minutes. But if it's only mediocre, let's say it's a 3, she might only do 30 of the dance circuits, which could only take a minute or two. And so the better she thinks her site is, the longer, the more persistently she will dance to advertise that site.
And the more she dances, the more the other scout bees back at the swarm, they get to see the dance. So now they have directions, and they can also visit the same site.
Exactly. If you're only dancing 1 minute, it might only be maybe 5 or 6 bees that can get the message. If you're dancing 10 minutes, it might be 50 or 60 bees that can get your message.
So if they like the site, then they come back and they dance the same dance, and dancers beget more dancers and more dancers, and that's how they vote. Eventually, one dance, wince.
This process tends to snowball.
But here's a question. Do they end up making the right choice? I mean,
We know that they do choose well. That was an important question to address.
He knows because he ran an experiment. He built 5 nest-like boxes and placed them near a beehive in Maine.
And of those 5, one of them will be an excellent home site. It'll be a box with 40 liters of space.
And that's just perfect size. So over and over, and year after year, he let the bees choose a box, which they did.
And overall, it's probably 90 to 95% of the time they choose the best box.
That surprises me, you know, because I would think if you got a really persuasive but misguided, you know, an Adolf Hitler bee. So she's like fabulously good at speaking, and she gives the best wiggle dances, and everybody follows her to hell. So they all go to the worst possible site. Why doesn't that happen?
The reason that doesn't happen, Robert, is that scout bees do not blindly follow one very enthusiastic dancer.
In fact, these bees, they don't follow anybody, he says.
Each of those bees makes her own independent evaluation of that site. And only if the bee judges that that site really is good will she herself then come back to the swarm and advertise it.
So there are checks and balances here.
That's right. That's a key part of this whole process.
So no Hitlers, no bullies, no queen telling you how to vote. The scouts just dance themselves into a kind of voting consensus.
And that's certainly how it works here. This demonstrates that democracy really does work.
Well, there's one little sneaky thing that nature gave these bees that you just haven't mentioned.
That's right.
What about a bee who's absolutely convinced that she's got the best site and the majority wants an oak tree, she wants an elm tree, and she's thinking, no, I will never, ever, ever give up.
We haven't seen any bees like that.
Really?
That's correct. In the world of scout bees, you don't have diehard bees that just dance and dance and dance forever.
So what do they do?
A bee puts forth her opinion for a while, as expressed in her dance, and then she goes quiet. It's what I call the retire and rest.
So she'll do 300 dances for her elm tree, and then when she's done, all the passion just kind of disappears. It's like water going down a drain.
Yes, that's it. Yep.
And this is genetic. It's built in?
That's built in. And when you think about it, that works really well because it kind of clears the decks.
I'll say there's now you don't have fanatics.
Because those fanatics, they're kind of gumming up the works. Yeah. They're keeping an idea going beyond the point at which it's actually useful.
On the other hand, you can't get a principled bee. What you get, actually, is animals who deep in their DNA have a nature that favors consensus.
Yes, each bee's behavior is tuned, is designed, has been shaped by natural selection to make the swarm a good decision-making body.
And do you find yourself admiring these bees?
Oh, tremendously. In fact, I admire them so much, I've used some of the things that I've learned to organize committee meetings.
Like what kind of things?
We had a recently a very big debate.